thank you for joining me today. I'm with Lincoln Slagle, owner and founder of Emancipation Brewing Company in Fairbury, Illinois. He's in studio. We're going to talk about business, beer, the new Huey beer, and the new Dave's beer even. You're doing a lot of great things, Lincoln, so I really appreciate you making the time today to just talk to me.
Happy to be here.
Right on. So how has business been going for you? Let's see, you opened this place in 2019. That's only 3 years ago.
Yeah. It's been right at 3.5 years now.
Wow. So how have things been going?
Good. I mean, it's hard to, my wife and I were just talking about this morning. It's been hard the last couple of years to keep track of time and, you know, different things. Like I looked the last time I was on here was December 12th or something of 2020. So it's been almost 2 years.
Dang.
Which, you know, for you and everything you've done is, it's wild to think, you know, it's already been 2 years.
I know. It seems like, honestly, when I look at you and your business, it seems like you're such a staple in the Central Illinois area, and you're so unique and special. It seems like you've been around for a decade, but it's, how long, 3.5 years, you said?
Yeah, and I mean, it you know, from my perspective, it doesn't always feel like that, just because, you know, everything's so uncertain. You know, over half of our business life still was during the height of COVID, you know, COVID was affecting it. So it, you know, it still feels like we're in our infancy just because of that. You know, it's almost like lost years or something.
Right. You know. Does it ever feel weird to you? Do you ever have, like, not to get too deep, I know with me in this podcast, sometimes I think about it, it's over 2 years old, it still feels like it's months old. It still feels like it's in its infancy, and maybe it is in the grand scheme of things. Do you ever feel like, man, I need to get to work. Like, time's going away.
Yeah. Usually it's about 20 minutes after I start drinking coffee in the morning is when that happens. But it does feel like that. It feels like the you just got to put in the effort. And I do think it's a good kind of feeling to have, that you know, make sure that passion's still there. And by always feeling like you're just starting out, you know, every day's a new day kind of thing, I do think that that's a good way to kind of progress and make sure that you're not getting stagnant, you're not, you know, moving backwards, not staying still. And, you know, I think I'd be a little more worried if I felt like I've been doing this for a long time, just because, you know, you don't want it to feel like things are getting old. You know?
Right. Well, before we continue on, let's do a few things. First of which, we've got the Huey beer here with us.
Yes.
Everyone, the Huey beer, if you're from Fairbury, honestly, any surrounding towns, you probably have heard of it. Great story behind that. We're going to get into it. But I'm going to put the camera on you. Let's go ahead and pour these.
Yeah.
Because I know I'm not great at this. If you see a bunch of foam when I put the camera back on me.
Foam is not a bad thing.
It's not?
It goes away. So, you know, as long as you don't, you know, totally spill, there's no long-term downside.
Really? Because what? Just turns into beer?
Well, and the foam has all that aroma. You know, if you get a flat beer and smell it versus something with some foam on it, that's where all that aroma is trapped. You know, that's... you know, it's just a vital part of it, you know, and it's, if you go to Europe, you know, a lot of times you'll see foam, you know, depending on the type, like Czech Republic, sometimes there's specific types of pours where the whole thing is foam, you know, and it's just a different experience of the same thing.
One more time, you said the aroma is in the foam.
Yeah.
Some people think it's a delicacy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's as a brewer and as a drinker, it's my favorite part of the beer is the foam, whether it's, you know, that little foam mustache you get, or the little bit of extra aromas that are in there. You know, it's just kind of a fun thing.
So people that make fun of guys like me for having too much foam when they pour their beer, really, you don't know what you're talking about. Some people pay extra for that type of thing. That's actually a great thing for like Lincoln, the brewmaster.
And it goes away. It's not like it's a permanent problem, you know.
Right.
You just wait a little bit.
Exactly. It turns into beer, but it's less carbonated beer, right?
Yeah, that's true,
too.
That one of the things that in other countries, especially the Czech Republic, like I said, they will pour it differently to give different mouthfeels, different flavors, different aromas. So whether you pour it with a bunch of foam at the beginning and it releases a bunch of that CO2, or you pour it real softly so you keep all that CO2 in there, it's got the extra fizz. So you can manipulate the same beer by pouring it different ways. So,
got it.
Yeah, it's kind of a fun thing. It's a way to make the same beer tastes different.
Well, let's go ahead and cheers real quick.
Yeah, of course.
Cheers to your budding business. It's not budding. You're continually growing and thriving business that's doing a lot of great things. And cheers to this Huey drink. I'm going to ask you about Huey in just a second, but first, I got to pay the light bills here.
Of course.
So, Choosing insurance can be complicated and daunting, and that's why you need to call my friend Pam Deaton with Health Markets. Pam will help you with all of your insurance needs, including health, life, vision, dental, and disability insurance. She does it all. She's consistently been one of Health Markets' top national agents over the years and continues to earn great reviews from her clients. If you or a loved one needs to find the right insurance plan, which you do, you're in the right hands with Pam. Call her up at 309-287-2518. That's 309-287-2518 to see how she can help you today. And one more sponsor. I love this place. It's Marshalloni's Pizza in Fairbury, Illinois. Great pizza. I've eaten there my entire life. Some of my best friends are family members of the Marshalloni's family. They're actually the Strong family. But the great thing is, if you order, call them up and order between 4 and 5 p.m. any day of the week. You can show up anytime after that before they close at 8 p.m. and get a second pizza for free of equal or lesser value to the pizza that you ordered. Am I saying that right? Hopefully. Happy hour discount. It's amazing. Their pizza's delicious. The family's incredible. Right there in downtown Fairbury, Illinois, Marshalloni's Pizza. You can't out pizza the Marshalloni's. What am I saying right now? Better pizza, better ingredients, Marshalloni's Pizza. Okay, anyway, speaking of...
Love Marshalloni's.
Yeah, do you love Marshalloni's?
Yeah, ever since I was a kid. Yeah, I missed the location, you know, with the bowling alley and the, mm-hmm. you know, the endless ranch dressing that they make. It's so good.
Right, I love Marshalloni's, man. You can't have pizza without beer. I'm a strong believer of that. You have a pizza place out at Emancipation. I think it goes perfectly, right?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, it's a different style than, you know, the other places around. So I like a nice variety myself, you know. Mm-hmm. Each day a different style.
It's a Neapolitan, is that right?
Sort of. It's sort of like Neapolitan mixed with New York style. So it's, you know, thin crust. It's a little less soft than Neapolitan. Traditionally, those are like kind of wet in the middle. This is not quite like that. So it's our own take on that. But,
okay, got it.
Yeah.
Well, before I mention those sponsors, we were talking about Huey Beer a little bit. This is an amazing thing, Huey Beer. I'm not going to tell the people about it. I want you to tell them all about it. What is Huey? Let's start there.
Well, it started out as an idea to support Prairie Central athletics and other extracurriculars. It was one of those things where I was so impacted by the extracurriculars that I took part in, you know, sports, band, leadership stuff at school. And, you know, I don't remember the lessons that I had specifically, you know, a lot of teachers had a great impact on me too, but, you know, from a, you know, life perspective, you don't remember, you know, your pre-calculus day 25 lesson. You know, what you remember is the teacher and their, you know, their effect on you. And I feel like sports and extracurriculars are so, so important because of that. So it started out as a way of me thinking, how could I give back to them? And being a new business and with COVID and everything, we just didn't have money to give. So I got the idea for sort of a perpetual donation idea. A great example of places that do this, you know, a church is kind of the ultimate example. You know, they aren't passing around the collection hat once a year. You know, that you give a little bit, whatever you can each time. And, you know, I think that that's a, you know, a great method of doing it. You know, for us, we're able to give, instead of maybe one lump sum every year, we're able to donate smaller amounts, hopefully forever. And so, you know, it's kind of a unique thing in that this beer is year round. So that part of the idea was it had to be year round. A portion of the proceeds were going to go to the school, to the extracurriculars, that kind of stuff. But, you know, we wanted it to be not that you have to have something in return for donating, but, you know, it's nice as somebody who's donating to get, you know, a little something back. Mm-hmm. So we thought it'd be neat to be able to offer something of value to the customer, to the end drinker, while they and us are all sort of contributing to, you know, the future, which is, you know, the kids and stuff like that. So it's, that was sort of how it came to be. And then there was the months long process of designing the beer, doing test batches, coming up with the label, all that stuff that kind of was auxiliary.
Okay. So for people that don't know, Prairie Central High School's mascot is Huey the Hawk. That's why it's named Huey. And I was talking at the football game the other day. Prairie Central had a great season. It just ended, sadly, the other day in the quarterfinals. You and I were both watching that Facebook live stream.
Yeah.
I've been glued to that the past couple weeks. They do a great job of that, by the way. Kent Casson and who else is in there?
Well, that specific one was Mike Wolf and Jeff Curl.
That's right.
But, yeah, I was actually going to mention that because I think Kent really deserves a huge shout-out because – You know, I wish more schools, you know, I saw on the live stream there were people from other schools thanking him for offering this. And, you know, it's, I figure besides the time when Prairie Central went to state, the state championship, that actually had to be the most viewed Prairie Central football game. You know, there were over 1,500 people watching live, plus the stands were packed and everything. I mean, it's really neat to think about kind of providing that value to the community where, you know, they don't have to get out of their house if they're not able to, or if they didn't have time, or, you know, whatever. It's being able to put the spotlight on, you know, the sports and things like that is so neat. So I think he's doing an awesome job with that.
Right. And also, I mean, the broadcasting, the commentary makes it all the more better. It was really cool. Yeah. Kent Caston, we're in the same industry. That guy's awesome, though. I've learned a lot from you. I really admire you. Good guy. And Mike Wolfen, did you say it was
Jeff Curl. Matt's Curl. Brother, yeah.
Okay, got it. Yeah, I thought it was Matt. I was like, dang, Matt's I thought he didn't have much time. Yeah. But not that Jeff has plenty of time or anything, but no, it was really great, so I'm glad we went ahead and said that. But while I was at a football game the other day, I said something like, Huey, I believe I was talking about your beer, gives 3% of the proceeds to certain funds at Prairie Central, and I didn't know that your mom was standing right over there. And she said, no, maybe I'm remembering it wrong, but she said it's 10%.
Well, it's not a specific percent. It's basically it varies every time. But it's you know, it's not a huge money maker for us in the end. You know, beer is expensive to make, especially these days with how things have gone. But it was basically the max we could give without kind of, you know, losing our rear ends on it. So it was that was kind of the goal, was just, you know, what can we give, you know, from every batch that would make a meaningful difference also. So it's, you know, it's not a huge glamorous amount of money, but I feel like, you know, and on that golf team one, which is the first one, we were able to give enough to the men's and women's team to more than double their budget, you know. So, you know, I think that's another important thing for people to remember is high school sports are not, you know, necessarily high budget things. You know, it doesn't take a lot of money to make a difference. You know, we as a tiny business that, you know, has a small footprint with Huey, we're able to more than double the men's and women's golf team budget. So, you know, part of the idea was to also just bring awareness to how small school sports are struggling. You know, things are getting cut. You know, the future's not looking that great. And I'm not sure what I would have done had I not had the experience of golf or basketball or band, you know, those things.
Do you think that those small school sports really rely on generous donors like yourself to survive?
Well, I do. And, you know, somebody like Matt Curl at the Fairbury Speedway, they give way more than we do or could ever dream of to the school in different ways. And I think that, you know, people like that are sort of the unsung heroes of it because, you know, they understand the kind of the impact of it. And I know Matt was actually my eighth grade basketball coach. So, you know, I've known him for a long time going back, and, you know, even though he's not coaching anymore, he's still giving back. And, you know, like I said, it doesn't take a lot, you know, even if it's going to the game and buying a ticket and a, you know, bucket of popcorn or something, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of Matt and golf, that guy was a D1 golfer. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's insane. I would have never thought. Now he's running the racetrack.
Yeah, I spent a lot of my growing up years on the golf course admiring Matt because he was, you know, the best golfer that played there, you know, at least at some point he was. You know?
Really?
But yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Okay, and so you give, what's the schedule look like for Huey? How often do you give? Is it a monthly thing? You might have already said this. Is it a monthly thing, a quarterly thing? How do you decide who to give it to, and how do you give it to them? Do you show up with a check or what?
Yeah, so it's basically each time a batch is finished up. So we, you know, we go through, we sell it, and then we donate a portion of that batch revenue to the school. And so I wanted it to go directly to the programs, not be filtered through the school. I think Prairie Central does a great job of dealing with all that stuff as well as they can. I mean, it's a tough job no matter what. But I wanted it to go directly to the sport or activity. So each activity, at least this is how it is at Prairie Central, has an activity fund. What I do is basically write a check directly to that activity fund. It's the same fund that the school deposits each year's budget into for that activity. So let's say for the band, you know, the school deposits X amount into this account, and that's what they draw from throughout the year. And they do their other fundraisers and things, and then the boosters help with sports and other things, music as well. But I want it to just be as simple and clean as possible, so I give it directly. I hand the coach or the, in the band's case, the band director or director of music, a check.
Wow.
Talk to them a little bit about what they're thinking they might spend it on, you know, whether it be a new instrument or sheet music or golf balls or golf shirts, whatever it might be. You know, it's that was kind of the idea, is unfiltered, just let them do what they see fit. You know, a lot of times coaches know best what their players need or their, you know, what they are actually needing. Maybe it's not a necessity, but something that would really make it a lot more fun or better, you know, for the kids, that kind of stuff. So,
Is it pretty special for you to hand them that check? Does it feel good?
It does. It's funny because, you know, in a lot of ways, I've been out of high school for quite a while now, but I still feel such a connection to it, just, you know, all the memories and the impact it had on me. So, you know, even just going back into the high school is kind of a neat experience, just because it's you know, knowing that I'm actually, you know, giving something. You know, in high school, as a student, you know, all you're doing is taking for the most part. You know, you're taking education, you're taking coaches' time, you don't see where the money goes, you don't understand any of that stuff. But, you know, now that I'm past that and I understand how all these things work, it's neat to be able to actually provide something in return. You know, so many of those teachers and coaches, you know, they're working for what equates to way less than minimum wage once you account for the hours.
Really?
Yeah, I mean.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Once you account for the hours, I mean, especially coaches, but also teachers, I mean.
Oh, because they work on salary.
They work
divide
on salary.
Divide by their hours.
Divide, yeah. Mm. A lot of, not, you know, not all, of course, and it depends on what season it is, so forth. But I know, like, Lisa Klein, who's one of our awesome bartenders now, she worked at the school for so long, and the amount of hours she put in was just unreal. And I'm not sure, I have no idea what they're paying her, but I guarantee you if you divide it amongst the hours that she worked, it was not enough. You know.
I have never thought about it, Lincoln, until you just said it just now. But I was the assistant coach for the wrestling team a couple years ago at Prairie Central. Loved it. Most amazing thing. One day when I retire, if I get well off, I'm going to do a lot of wrestling coaching. You love sports. I love sports. You talked about golf, how important it was to you. Anyway, sports are amazing. And I mean, we worked probably, I don't know, 3 months or so plus, and I was in there well over 200 hours, and I got a check at the end of the season for like $3,000. And I don't even want to do the math on that exactly. You know what? I will do the math.
Yeah, I'm curious.
Okay, so I was probably there we'll just say 80 days times 2 hours a day. That's being conservative, 160. Okay, so 3,000 divided by, let's say 160?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe I won't say that out loud. I think I did my math
No, but here's the other issue, though.
That didn't prove my point. Okay.
The point is, you may have been there in person for that many hours, but how many hours were you thinking about it? Were you talking to people with – how many hours were you actually working? That's the issue.
Oh, yeah. Driving and thinking
exactly.
About these kids, talking to these kids. Oh, yeah, no
I, doubt. I talk about this a lot with coaches and people who especially run businesses understand this. The work doesn't necessarily stop when you're not there. And for teachers, if papers have to get graded, they've got to get graded. You know, if for a coach, if he's, you know, if he's got to spend extra time outside of the gym, let's say, you know, to help a kid or talk to some parents or, you know, all that stuff, it just adds up. And it's the amount of hours is far surpasses what, you know, they're actually even claiming, you know. And this happens with so many people in so many jobs. I'm just saying for teachers, you know, business owners, coaches, those kinds of fields that are a little more vague, a lot of gray area, and when work is happening and when it's not, you know, it's not like you're leaving the office. You know, it's people's time isn't necessarily accounted for.
You mean to tell me that once the brewery closes and people go home, your job's not over?
Sadly not, no.
What do you do after the place closes? It's not straight home watching a movie with your wife?
No, and you know, and it's so variable. That's the other thing. There's value in predictability also, you know. So not knowing whether I'm going to be able to leave at 4 or 9, you know, it just you know, that plays a part too. And you know, for us, and I'm sure it's this way for everybody else, every, you know, every day is different. the work has to get done regardless. And so it just depends. Sometimes I'm messaging with customers who have questions. Sometimes I'm trying to, make sales calls, deliver beer, and try to do everything efficiently also. So it's different all the time. But, it's actually one thing I was hoping we could talk about a little bit is that kind of work-life balance part of it for business people in general. Cause it's kind of an interesting thing that I think, plays really well into, especially like I said, with the teachers and coaches.
Absolutely. I want to ask you about that work-life balance. I want to ask you why your parents named you Lincoln, and if that has anything to do with Emancipation being the name of this brewing company. I want to ask you about golf. I have a lot of great questions coming up in just 1 second, but first, here's a quick word from our beloved sponsors who make this show possible and great conversations like this one possible. So take a listen.
Fairbury Furniture in Fairbury, Illinois has added over 7,000 square feet to their showroom, and that means more selection for you. Why wait for your furniture? You can buy anything on the showroom floor and take it home today. So hop in the car and take the short drive to Fairbury Furniture, where customers love their selection, pricing, and their take-it-home-today power. So many Bloomington Normal residents have made Fairbury Furniture their favorite furniture store, just 26 minutes away in downtown Fairbury.
Hurry down to Fairbury Furniture, where the furniture rocks.
If you've been living with an aching back, debilitating imbalances, or any physical discomfort and just want to get back to living a fit and happy life, look no further than In Motion Fitness Center and Outpatient Therapy at Fairview Haven in Fairbury, Illinois. Our highly skilled therapy team will guide you through proven and effective exercises to help you regain your strength, movement, and mobility, all with our renowned level of love and care. Live your best life. Call our therapy team at 815-692-6724. To find out how we can serve you today.
Right on. All right, that was Fairbury Furniture and Fairview Haven's In Motion Physical Therapy. Two wonderful places. Thank you very much to those two businesses for sponsoring this show. You make conversations like this one possible. Lincoln, before we went to that break, I wanted to ask you about the work-life balance. You do a lot of very difficult things. You work nonstop. Every time I go out to that brewery, you're out there talking to everybody. You're walking into the back. You do a lot of things, but tell me about the work-life balance.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that shows in a lot of ways in businesses whether the people involved are kind of, whether they're happy, whether they're passionate, that kind of thing. And I see it so often, with other companies and other business owners, and they're either burnt out or they've lost their passion for whatever they're doing, that kind of thing. And so one of the things is my wife and I, who she works full time with me, we're not always at the brewery, and we make a point to not be there 24/7, and make a point to take vacations and things like that as much as we can. Because I think it's so valuable, not just to myself, but to the business itself. I think I see so many places, and we sell to a lot of bars and restaurants, and I talk to the managers and the owners quite a bit, and you can just tell sometimes when you walk into a place, even as a customer, you can see this sometimes. The people just aren't super excited to be there. Maybe even if the service is great and the products are great, sometimes you can just tell. And it's kind of just a sad feeling that you get when you walk in somewhere, and it's and so I'm always a big proponent of that. And so for us, we try to take those vacations, but we always learn things too. It's so valuable, I think, to go to other areas and see how people are doing things. Be like, oh man, I really like how they're doing this. I don't want to copy that. Maybe we'll take a little nugget here and there from different businesses and put it into our own, and then we come back refreshed and the passion's still there.
So is it the traveling that gets you fired back up? Is that what it is? How many places have you been to? And is it always for business purposes?
No, it's we try not to go specifically to places for business purposes, unless it's like a conference or something like that. But it's always somewhere that's interesting. And then we find things that are related to the business. There's always things, you walk into a national park and you see how they're doing admission. Maybe that gives you ideas for how to deal with a busy day at the brewery. You go into a restaurant and see how they're you know, menus are set up. And you'd say, oh, I really like that, but I don't like the rest of it. You know, maybe we'll implement some small thing back at our place. And even going to local restaurants, I think, is a great way to find out, you know, what's working for people, what's not working. Just get ideas. And it's also very refreshing because you get to experience that not in a sort of work environment.
Do you enjoy learning from others?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably like my favorite thing.
I think I feel the exact same way. I love you. For people that don't see, I'll put it on the wide angle here. There's a lot of wires and stuff here, and we were kind of talking about that during the break. I love going to TV studios and just being in awe about how they do things. And I love just learning from other people. Who was it? It wasn't Abraham Lincoln, but I thought somebody said, someone smart and great said, everyone is my superior in something, and from them I seek to learn in that way, or something like that. And yeah. I think that's a great way to live life. I mean, your dad is an inventor type of guy, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think you have some of that in you. You're just always looking for little ways to improve your systems in everywhere else you go in life.
Yeah, I think my personal favorite thing is, whether it be research or learning, you know, whatever you want to call it, it's, you know, I find the most pleasure in improving, you know, that continual improvement kind of thing. So, you know, whether it's Huey, where we're, you know, we're not changing really, but, you know, we might tweak something here and there just to try to eke out that next little bit of better, whatever it might be. And it's, you know, that part definitely I get from, you know, partially from him, partially from my mom. You know, there's a lot of that, you know, kind of always learning, always trying to improve things, you know, never trying to kind of sit back and let things ride. You know, it's I guess the most pleasure I get out of what I do.
Mm-hmm. Hey, turn that microphone up like this, because everyone I haven't the other direction.
Whoops. Oh, perfect.
Something like that. Yeah, because everyone always hits the wires, so I need to
even
change
better.
It. Everyone can still see your face. Don't worry. But okay, tell me about how your parents raised you though, because I'm genuinely curious. Your parents are good people. I know them well. Do you think they contributed to your entrepreneurial spirit?
Yeah, it's funny because it's not just my parents. It's the whole family. I forget the number off the top of my head, but I have a large family. There's only a few aunts and uncles across the whole family that did not work for themselves. There's only a few that are employed by others. The rest of them, I mean, and I'm talking like 30 aunts and uncles between both sides, and there's only maybe two or three that don't. That don't work for themselves. And so I grew up in an entrepreneurial kind of, and farming is this way too. You know, if you don't go out and do the work, it's not going to get done kind of, and there's no set schedule. It's sort of, you just got to get it done. So I grew up in that sort of mentality. And so it's always been sort of embedded in me where I just like working for myself. I like, kind of the freedom, but also, you know, knowing that what I put in, I get out, kind of a thing. And it was, you know, I saw the hard part of it too. I mean, probably from as long as I can remember up until almost high school, my dad would work from, you know, 5:30 in the morning. He may not get home till 7, 8 at night. And working multiple jobs, you know, and doing things on the weekends, you know, to make his business successful. You know, it stuff like that, you know, really had an effect, you know, where it's, you know, that was sort of a unique experience, you know, seeing that firsthand, and then my mom working multiple jobs also. And
your mom would work multiple jobs?
Yeah, she has been selling kitchen products for 25 years, actually since the a year or two after I was born. And plus she worked as a chef at a couple places. She was always very active doing things. And so I guess, you know, that was always sort of a, you know, both situations were sort of role models of how, you know, you know, kind of how things can get done, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Did your mom ever give you sales advice or anything? Because that's a humongous part of what you do.
Yeah, I will say I'm not a good salesperson.
Really? What? What are you talking about?
I'm not at all. For some reason, it's not my thing. It's if people have technical questions about beer, things like that, I really enjoy talking about that. But I have a hard time going into a place and saying, hey, you know, this is what I've made, you know, this is what's cool about it or what's good about it and what's different about it. And, you know, would you like to spend your hard earned money on the thing that I made? You know, it's hard for me to kind of do that. You know, I'm just not outgoing enough to go in and just meet new people and do that very well. I mean, I do it, but it's not It's not my strong suit, for sure.
Well, speaking of the technical side of beer and beer making, tell me about IPAs, hazy IPAs, and double IPAs. They're kind of a meme type of thing. People, I don't know what exactly the joke is, but some people hate IPAs. I love IPAs. I love hazy IPAs, but I couldn't tell you why.
Yeah.
What's the difference between these things, and what does IPA even mean? Is it India Pale Ale?
Yeah.
Is
yeah,
the myth behind that true?
So the story, IPA means India Pale Ale, and the name is sort of, the history is also hazy on it,
but
the official, I was actually just researching this last week, and a beer historian, I watched a whole video that he did on the history of IPA, so this is timely, but the, basically what was happening is, the East India Company, which everybody's heard of, which was essentially the largest trading company. They were almost the government in themselves in England, you know, long ago. They were shipping things to India and the Far East, sort of as a regular. That was basically their business, you know, shipping things there, bringing things back. So all of the sort of expats in India and that area missed home, of course. So they would send food, beverages, including beer, and basically over time they found out that if they added extra hops, the beer would last longer. That's sort of the short version of it. So just naturally, by virtue of trying to make sure the beer was still good when it got there, I mean, they didn't have refrigeration, they didn't have a laboratory, they couldn't test to see if it was infected. So they were trying to naturally find their way into shelf shelf stability. So more hops, which hops act as a natural preservative, they would basically, the beers would be better when they got there. So over time, then people just started to enjoy them, and they then died off after a while, and they've now come back, obviously, but that's how they started.
And what is a hazy IPA, then?
Yeah, so a hazy IPA is basically, in the reference of modern American beer, is a lower bitterness. So people think of IPAs as, like, bitter, maybe grapefruit kind of situation going on. These are less bitter, more, like, tropical-oriented. It's all hop-derived flavors, but it's just kind of a very, I guess.
If even the beer expert is struggling to figure this out, then
not a lot of brewers are big fans of hazy IPAs because they see it as sort of an intro level IPA. I think that's a poor way of looking at it, because I think that that's kind of a gatekeeping attitude for beer. I think that, you know, if people enjoy it, they should be drinking it. And hazy IPAs tend to be a little softer, like I said, a little less bitter, a little more accessible to get into. But there's so many flavors and varieties of hops and so much complexity in a great hazy IPA that I think it's a shame that some people look down on them. But yeah, in reference to, like, if you see an American IPA, that's probably going to be a little bit more bitter, maybe more clear. A little bit more pine and grapefruit kind of flavors, whereas these are more like mango and.
How do they get those flavors in there?
Hops? Just the hops.
How do they do that? What are hops?
So a hop is a flower. It's like a close relative of cannabis, actually. And so you get a lot of the same. That's why some IPAs smell kind of like you're at a concert or something.
Like marijuana?
Yeah. So the point being, they're processed a lot in the same way. So you can get oils, you can get. Dried and pelletized hops. But basically within the hop, there's this couple different kinds of acid and some other compounds. The short story of it is they're a flower that lend aromatics, flavoring, and bittering. So to a beer, you might add different varieties of hops that have different flavor compounds. You might have heard of the hop Citra, which classically has, like, citrus notes. So
that's just a kind of hop.
That's just a variety.
That mimics citrusy fruit. So they're not grinding up orange zest and putting it in there.
In some cases, they might be, but a standard IPA with no additions just has hops, barley, some other grains potentially, and water.
Really?
Yeah.
So there's no real fruit in there. It's just a flower that tastes somewhat like a citrusy fruit.
Yep. Yeah, so they have the same flavor compounds and aroma compounds that are found in specific fruits.
And then a hop is a flower, much like a bud for marijuana.
Essentially, they're
cousins.
Cousins, yeah.
interesting.
Yeah.
And they're so close of cousins that they can mimic each other's smells a little bit.
Exactly. And some breweries now are actually using like CBD oils and things like that. And by doing extracting oils and things like that, you can mimic flavors of all kinds of things. I had a non-alcoholic lemon lime. It tasted like a diet Sprite. And it was only using hop-derived oils. Because they isolated the orange flavor and the lemon flavor and the lime flavor, and they were able to make a lemon lime flavored beverage just with hop oil.
That's fascinating.
So yeah, it's wild what all they're doing, and they're sort of like, you know, just on the tip of the iceberg with some of this stuff. But yeah.
And I worked at Kemp's for a while. You know John Kemp, that guy's a madman. Kemp. Great
I just
place.
Dropped off beer there on my way here.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Great place. Love that guy. He's one of the only people that has never said yes to coming on. I've asked him so many times to come on. John Kemp, he's so busy, I guess.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I know. I work there, so he's crazy busy.
He's there all the time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. 5 a.m. to midnight.
Yeah.
Man, you do the math on that. But so he said that there are something about terpenes.
Yeah.
Terpenes, like he said something about skunk spray and terpenes and like weird things in nature, like marijuana and terpenes.
Yeah.
And they put those terpenes in certain beers for some flavor purpose, but it gives off a smell that smells exactly like marijuana or something like skunk spray even.
Yeah. Yeah. It's certain hops can smell like, I mean, they can literally smell like anything from herbs and spices to some of them people say smell like cat pee to, you know, rotten fruits to grass to lemongrass to... I mean, there's such a wide variety of aromas and flavors in hops that you sort of have a blank slate to use whatever hops that you want to you know, change the flavor of the beer.
Well, what are terpenes then?
It's a flavor compound oil, like kind of like the oil that might be extracted from a. That's kind of the easy answer. So, like a great example is our friends at Triptych in Savoy, Illinois. They make a hard seltzer that they flavor with terpenes, and they have done different ones that mimic berries, that mimic marijuana, different things like that. And it's, you know, it's only hop products, or they will. You can also get fruit derived oils. Think of it as like an essential oil. So you can get orange oil, you can get mint oil. It's kind of the same idea.
Interesting. They all come from hops.
Yeah.
Okay, so terpenes are baked into the hops.
Well, it's not just in hops. Terpenes can be found in anything.
Right, like skunk spray.
Yeah, but the terpenes, you know, that are make their way into a beer are generally hop-derived. So.
Interesting. That is so weird. So terpenes exist in a whole bunch of places in nature. Sometimes they smell similar to one another. And they have some... They serve some purpose, I'm sure, like a defensive purpose, perhaps.
Well, and a lot of times it's just like what happens to be there for flavor and aroma. Of, you know, if you think of an orange, you get this more zesty kind of smell, like when you peel it, and that you know, get that burst of that oil, where it kind of really is pungent and almost bitter, you know, that kind of thing. Versus what's inside of it, you know, there are different different hops. If you want kind of orange flesh, you can use one hop. If you want orange peel, you can use a different hop that kind of have those characteristics. It's crazy. When you think about natural flavors or, you know, lab-made flavors, a lot of times they're finding out what's the compound that you find in an orange, and we're going to replicate that, and that'll be sort of orange flavor. That's the general, super general explanation of it.
That's fascinating. Interesting. I never understood why what they did with grape, the flavor grape, because grape flavor purple stuff doesn't taste like grapes.
Yeah, I have no idea. Like. I'm not even sure. It's good, but it definitely doesn't taste like grapes.
Right. Okay, I want to ask you a little bit about golf, as weird as that is. You said that golf, you don't know what you would have done if golf hadn't been in your life when you were in high school. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
Well, part of it is the coaching. I'm sure Scott Willie.
He's
Prairie Central's coach. But golf is one of those things, and I hear a lot of people say this also, but I think it mirrors life in general better than maybe any other sport. That might be controversial, I don't know. But there's something about golf in that it's an individual sport. In high school you have a team, but really it's the individual. You're playing not against someone per se, but you're playing against yourself on that course. So really it's you playing against yourself. at the end of the day, and you are sort of the person to beat. Whether it's in the mental game or, you know, you're getting better physically, that kind of thing. But it's kind of that continual improvement that, there's a lot of kind of moral parts of golf. You know, a lot of it's trusting the other person that they're not going to cheat, that they're not going to maybe move their ball, try to shave strokes, that kind of thing. So you have that own code that you play by, same as you would, you know, in life, but you also have, the constant challenge. Golf is very unfair, just like life. You know, maybe your ball is heading right down the fairway and it hits a sprinkler head and bounces into the woods. You know, it's just one of those things. I feel like it prepares you for life better than maybe any other sport. Now, there are tons of positives of every sport, but mm-hmm. I feel like golf is the most all-encompassing that way.
You know what? I agree with you completely. Yeah, there are tons of benefits to golf, and the individual sports I think prepare you for life, especially a life in entrepreneurship, very well.
Yeah,
there was a big study, a credible study. I don't know if it was like some Blue Ribbon Journal or something published it, but it looked at high school age kids and their mental health in correlation with the sports that they participated in or did not participate in. So the worst thing to do is not participate in sports, statistically speaking.
Yeah,
but I was hoping that individual sports would make kids more mentally healthy. You know, I can do it, but I don't know exactly why. I could give my guesses why that's not the case, but they said that team sports allow kids to have a better mental health, and individual sports like golf, gymnastics, and wrestling were not that conducive to mental health.
I can totally get that with the camaraderie aspect. I will say that's better mental health then. I'm curious what the mental health down the road is when they go out into the world and they're acting on their own. I'm curious if one, actually follows through, and, you know, if team sports are quite as good down the road with mental health. I mean, I do think that team sports are huge, and that was one of my favorite parts of golf in high school and college was the team aspect, working together for a, you know, common goal kind of idea. Golf doesn't have the sacrificial aspect that other sports might, where you sacrifice your own benefit for the good of the team. So I think that it is missing that part. But, I think to me, whatever you can be involved in, you know, is, like you said, better than nothing.
That's for sure. Yeah. If you're not doing sports, you might be going home and being in your room by yourself, and that's not conducive for anything. Society, the individual, the family, nothing. I want to talk one more time. I know we were talking about golf there, but one more thing about beer. I'm going to make a clip out of this. I want to challenge you. See if you can do it in 90 seconds or less. Can you explain, as if I just turned 21. I don't know anything about beer. Tell me the difference between the big time beer species. I don't know what you want to call them. I'm talking lagers, ales,
yeah,
a pilsner, a stout.
Gotcha. All right,
and,
I got this.
What's the other one? What's the other one? Let me think. I wrote this down. Okay, porters. That's what I meant, pilsner. I don't even know really what a pilsner is, but ales, lagers, stouts, porters. Go.
All right. So there are two types of beer. There are ales and there are lagers. The difference is the type of yeast that is used in them. They're genetically different. So an ale is one genetic range of yeast. Lagers are made from another genetic family of yeast. There's some wild situations that also happen, but we won't get into that because it's like 0.001% of beer. Mm-hmm. But within ales are stouts, porters, IPAs, wheat beers. You know, there's basically that's this catch-all phrase for everything fermented with that genetic family of yeast. In the lager realm, which is the biggest in terms of beer production, you have pilsners, Box, you have kind of the American lagers like the Budweisers, the Busches, all those things. You have all the kind of German styles, except for Hefeweizen. And so there are two separate families of beer that it encapsulates everything. Ales, lagers.
Okay, well now you did it in the time allotted, but tell me about stouts and porters. Those are like heavy, creamy wintertime beers is what I think. I have no idea, but is that accurate?
They don't have to be heavy. The only difference between a lighter beer and a stout or porter is dark grains added to the recipe. So if you think about food coloring, is a great way to think about it. Only a few drops of food coloring can turn something totally dark. With beer, only a few dark grains can make a beer go from light to red or red to black. So it doesn't necessarily have to be dark. We make a style of beer that's my personal favorite called a black IPA, and it's only got a couple percent of the whole recipe. So let's say it's 500 pounds of grain. Only 20, 30 pounds might be dark, but it turns the whole beer black, and it's no heavier than an IPA would be. It's just black. So it's and it also depends on what you use, but basically a stouter or porter has different roasted grains. So think of like coffee when they're roasting it to become dark and have those kind of roasty, chocolatey flavors. They do the same thing with grains. So they take them and they roast them until they're dark. And when you grind them and add them to what is essentially the water, the wort they call it, you are coloring that. And it does give flavors like coffee and chocolate and roastiness. But it's basically just an addition to what otherwise would have been a light beer to color it. Now, you can also do other things to make it heavy and thick too, but it's not a requirement.
Interesting. Are they more for winter or is that not true?
It depends. In Ireland, Guinness is the biggest beer in the country year-round, and that beer is notorious. People, a lot of times, maybe they haven't had it in a long time, but it's actually a 4.2%, I think, ABV, so low alcohol. It's very light-bodied. It's dry, so it's not sweet. People, a lot of times, maybe that was the first dark beer they had, so they think of it as like a meal in a glass or something.
Yeah.
But it's, people drink those year-round. To me, I think it just depends on personal preference. Some people like dark beers in the summer. You know, I tend to, you know, save those for the colder months. But, you know, it's just my seasonal kind of preference.
When someone says something is light, are they referring to the alcohol percentage or is it something else?
It could be the ABV. It could be the calories. It could be the color. It just depends. People that say light beer tend to mean lower alcohol, lower calorie, lower carb kind of situation. Specifically American light beers. But in general, dark beers are, generally they are just kind of more seasonally popular, but you know, there's exceptions to that, of course.
Got it. Lincoln, I'm curious. You know what? Before I ask that question, I'm more curious, why did your parents name you Lincoln?
I don't think they have a good reason.
Really?
I think they said that they didn't love a lot of more male names, and they were trying to come up with something. I think the other options were like Tyler and I can't remember the other ones. But they ended up going with Lincoln when I was born. They hadn't decided before I was born. They decided right like, after.
Lincoln is such a specific name. There's only one Lincoln that people really think of when they hear Lincoln. Well, it's you and Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, the only other one sometimes I'll get is like, they'll spell my name L-I-N-K-I-N, like Linkin Park, the band. In fact, somebody once said, it's spelled like the president, and I said yes, and they still spell it like the band.
That's
but,
funny.
But, they specifically say they did not name me after the president, so.
Okay.
And when we came up with Emancipation, the name, I actually didn't realize it for months that there was any connection between my name and Emancipation. That was not the original reason behind the name. So it was just kind of a funny, it didn't hit me till months after. And somebody asked me that and I thought, well, actually that's perfect.
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me when you came up with the name, you didn't even put the two together that your name was Lincoln?
No.
And for people that don't know, or people that want to act like they know, but they don't necessarily know, the Emancipation Proclamation was passed by Abraham Lincoln in 1863, January 1st. But yeah, that's a huge deal. You really didn't know when you named the place Emancipation that, hey, wait a minute, my name is Lincoln, and that's who passed this.
I didn't realize it right away only because I had such a specific meaning for Emancipation in my head that I wasn't allowing, you know, any abstract thought in that way.
And what was the specific meaning?
Well, it was the original meaning, and we've kind of gotten away from it a little bit purposely, but it was the original idea was freedom from the bad parts of beer, whether it be drinking crappy beer just to drink it, drinking, not drinking what you like, large mass-produced beer that's, you know, maybe made by companies who aren't sound ethically, you know, all those things. Now, we sort of got away, like I said, from that kind of ideology, but we, fell in love with the name, and then one day somebody asked me about it and just clicked. I just hadn't thought about it besides the way I had been thinking about it previously.
That's interesting. That's enough to make you feel good about naming it that.
Yeah, it
though.
Worked out.
Wow, that I guess that fits perfectly. Why'd you get away from that ideology?
Well, I never wanted to come off as maybe snobby or looking down on people's preferences. There are a lot of people who like domestic beers because they like the taste. Some people, they just drink it because that's what they've always had and it's a habit. Other people genuinely like it. And I didn't want to make it seem like those people and their preferences were any less valid than ours. You know, whether they eventually become a craft beer drinker or not, you know, obviously I would like it if they did, but it wasn't like, I didn't want to demonize that and come off in a way that I didn't mean to, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Lincoln, feel free to say no. That was delicious, though. This Huey was fantastic. You said you have some Dave's beer. Hey, we got to make a commercial here soon. Get back and sponsor this show. But I was wondering, how big are those cans? Could we split one?
Yeah, we can split one.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Okay. While you get that, Lincoln was kind enough to bring his insulated bag full of goodies, including bacon, low-sodium bacon. He says it's the best. It says it's better than regular bacon. But, okay, so when did you make this thing? And was it really made and designed just for Dave's?
Yeah, we do sell it to other places, but it was designed to sell at Dave's and to in collaboration with Dave's. Mm.
The rough thing about this, I hear myself in my own microphone. I keep, like, burping inside myself. Like, it doesn't come out of my mouth. It just goes.
So, yeah, this was made in the spirit of Dave's and their.
Sweet. Thank you very much.
The family that runs it, who are such nice people, and they enjoy hoppy beer. So, we went with the hoppy wheat beer, you know, in the spirit of their. Hey, that's good.
Yeah, hey, look at that. A lot of foam, just like the Germans or whatever.
So this one's a much hoppier beer than the Huey.
I love it. Oh, I would think it's hazy because I can't see.
Yeah,
through
it is hazy. Yeah, but that's by virtue of being a wheat beer, which wheat beers are also hazy.
Okay, and I'm going to be here after this for the rest of the day, so I'm going to pour the rest of that right there. Oh, my gosh. Sorry, everyone listening. Let me show that to the camera, though.
Yeah, so
look at that.
The background, and there's a person here in Bloomington named Patty who does who actually put our label together for this one, and she did such a good job. She found an old picture from, I believe it, they pinpointed it to around 1963 or 4 at Dave's, which is the background here. The old storefront, you can see the cars from the 60s.
Wow.
But their deli, which is, you know, has their famous fried chicken and other things, is called Third Street. So we, we went with the old kind of deli. Do you remember that over the top?
Yeah, absolutely.
So with the old deli look, and then their classic design for that. But
let me show the camera one more time. So did Dave's come to you and say, "Hey, we'd like a beer of our own"?
No. So I had come up with this idea a long time ago to do a, for some reason, Third Street wheat. You know, it just sounds good with, you know, kind of the rhyming words, but it was, I got the idea because they were such early supporters of us. You know, they had told us when we first opened, you know, whenever you have beer to sell, you know, we'll buy it regardless. You know, they didn't say if they wanted it at a certain price, anything. They just wanted to support us, and they do that with so many small businesses. And the people that run it are just so thoughtful and generally, you know, they care about the local community. And so when I came up with the idea to do a Dave's beer, I didn't just want to make a Dave's beer and then try to sell it to them. I wanted them to be a part of making it. So I pitched the idea at them to do a, you know, Third Street Hoppy Wheat, and they were all about it from the start. And they gave input on what kind of beer and whether, you know, kind of the flavor ideas and stuff like that too. So,
wow. No, those people at Dave's are amazing. I love those guys. The Steffens, you got Mark, you got Justin, you got Brian, you got, what's their mom's name? Mark's mom's name?
Oh, it's, oh my goodness, I'm blanking on it.
Not Jeannie, it's something cute.
I forget. Emmy.
Emmy? Is that what it is? Yeah. Emmy, yeah. And she's like 90-something.
Yeah, I think, I forget, is she 90 or 94, something like that. But yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, but what they do there is just so awesome, and it's crazy to see people from all over Central Illinois go there, whether it's for their big meat sale, those things. I mean, it's it's a wonderful place, you know, store in itself.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I think about Dave's, the reason that they do so well is just because of their philosophy of business. They want to wow the customer. They're also, I believe they're an AC family. They're very religious. They're very kind, hospitable, friendly people. What is your philosophy of business? Because it's served you well, whatever it is. So I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall, I would say it's providing something that is valuable to, you know, to our customers, but it's also making decisions that are smart in the long term. I feel like, I mean, you see this all the time. Businesses are making short-term decisions, whether it's, you know, not treating their employees right in the short term. Maybe it's not being, you know, kind to everybody. Maybe it's, you know, making short-term profit-based decisions on the back end of the business, you know, as opposed to trying to do things to, you know, increase the chance that they're going to be around in 20 or 30 years. So I guess anytime I'm making a decision, you know, I try to think, you know, how is it going to be perceived by the customers? Because it doesn't care what I meant to happen. You know, it's how are people going to perceive this and receive kind of what we're doing? And then, you know, on top of that, you know, is this a good decision for the longevity and the long-term outlook of the business?
Okay. So speaking of the longevity and the long-term outcome of the business, what would you say you want Emancipation Brewing Company, if you want it to remain just that, to look like in 20 years? What would you say?
Well, I hope we're still making Huey, for one.
Nice.
I hope that's around for the long term. And I mean, as long as people keep buying it, we'll keep making it, but it's and we'll keep donating. But, you know, the place that we've made out there, the whole goal is to be a kind of a timeless place to go and spend time with friends and family. So it's, you know, there's no frills as far as, like, there's no big TVs. There's no, you know, we don't do a lot of live music. We don't do loud music. It's just sort of a place for where people can go spend time with friends, family, et cetera. They can bring their kids. And, you know, it's a place that is, that I guess is comfortable for people, community space almost. And so I want to keep kind of working toward the essence of that, I guess you could say. So, you know, in 20 years, I hope it's mostly the same as far as the tap room goes, where people can go and feel comfortable and spend time and enjoy the beers and learn about beer, but also, you know, not feel like it's a, like you said, not a snobby place that's like, you know, pinkies up only kind of situation. So, you know, that's the main thing. But then we try to do interesting events. Like we do a Kolsch night, which is like an authentic table service thing. It's very unique. It's only really done in Cologne, Germany. And we sort of brought it here and do our version of it. And it's a really unique experience. So a lot of experience-based stuff like that too.
When I think of your place on the average day, if I had to pick one word to describe it, two words, it's either lovely or beautiful. It's not wild and crazy, though.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the times these craft beer places, I go to a lot in Bloomington Normal, and they're like fast-paced, a little more exciting.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, I don't know of any brewery that matches the view that you guys have, the ambiance that you guys have. It's in this rustic, beautiful old barn, and the service is incredible. The views, you might... People that come from the big cities, they might never see a view like that. It is, you could watch someone run away for a week. It is just gorgeous. The sunset's amazing. I have to imagine the sunrise is pretty beautiful as well out there. It's really something, though. It's definitely a brewery unlike any that I've ever been to.
It's funny, especially because with the view part of it, because I grew up there, and I never once, as you know, as a kid, looked at the view and was like, wow, we have such a nice view. It was just the fields and... What that meant to me was work. And then I remember right after we opened, somebody was like, man, you guys just have such a nice view. And I was like, really? Are you sure? Are we looking at the same thing? And it took me a little bit to come to appreciate the view. And now, you know, I come to work and I, you know, the sun's coming up or whatever. And a lot of times I'm like, wow, this really is beautiful. And it's sort of odd because I didn't used to see it that way myself. Mm-hmm. Just because it was what I was used to. But yeah, we try to have, I guess, serene is one of the words I might use for especially like an evening out there. It's like very relaxing and, you know, and even when it's busy, we try to keep it so that it's not like a wild place. You know, we make sure it's kid friendly all the time, which also to me means that it's, you know, going to be enjoyable for everybody, period, regardless of what you're into. Mm-hmm. So,
what's the worst part of doing business? What is your least favorite part about everything that you do? The most annoying thing, the biggest struggle? Give me some bad news here.
All right. So anybody that works with liquid or water, I mean, any plumber will tell you, if there is water or liquid involved, it will find a way to leak. It will find a way to break something, rust something, ruin something. That's just what liquid does. And so we are, you know, we're in a liquid business. You know, our whole product is a liquid. And so there are constantly things to fix. Luckily, my dad is a master of fixing things, and I've learned a fair share along the way. So we can usually tackle anything, but, you know, there are plenty of times where we have to call the refrigeration technician or fix the plumbing or fix the electrical, you know, there, because water got on it. You know, who knows? It's just that's by far the hardest thing, because it's relentless. You know, there's always something to fix.
Do you have any Flex Seal on site?
We do not. No, sadly not. We also have to be careful what we use around the beer as well. So always a consideration.
But what about the laws surrounding how you work with your beers? Is there a lot of alcohol legislation? I don't know what to call it, really.
Yeah, and what's funny is Illinois has not always been known to be the most
friendly to people like you.
Well, to business in general, you know, there's a lot of businesses leaving Illinois. I will say, from an alcohol perspective, Illinois is far better than most. You know, if you do business in a place like Utah, for example.
Well, Utah, it's almost prohibited.
Yeah, it's definitely not easy there. And it's that way in a lot of states where there are old prohibition era laws sort of still mingling around. You know, maybe they've been edited, but they're still kind of there. A lot of places you'll see you can't sell alcohol on Sundays, or you can't sell alcohol until 9 a.m. on Sundays.
Is this just Utah, or is this other places?
No, other places. In Wisconsin, really? I think it's 9 a.m. or something like that. On Sundays, you can't buy alcohol. They won't let you check it out at the register.
Where is this at?
That's, I think, in Wisconsin. It's a statewide 9 a.m. law on Sundays.
You're kidding me.
Mm-mm.
I can't believe that. I remember my dad went to college here at ISU, and he said that he couldn't buy beer on the weekends or something.
Yeah, and in Joliet, I know Sunday till 8 or 9 or 10 in the morning also, in certain areas of Joliet, you can't buy alcohol. I think being Sunday, they traditionally it was a day where they didn't want people drinking. I think people who were making these laws way back then, mm-hmm. You know, I think their foresight wasn't great, because I think if somebody is in a situation where they're drinking too much, I don't think that not being able to buy beer from midnight to 8 a.m. on a Sunday is going to affect them or stop them. But, you know, that's a whole other, you know.
Yeah, that's just lawmaking, the problem with lawmaking in general.
Yeah.
Is those people are out of touch and like, we'll do this, stamp it.
And the reason I know this is because I went in at like 8 a.m. on a Sunday morning to a Jewel Osco to buy a bottle of wine, because we were having people over that evening for dinner and I had forgotten to pick up wine. And they're like, sorry, you can't buy it. And it was funny, because it's like, that's probably most of the people trying to buy beer or wine on Sundays is people who are having people over that night and forgot to buy it.
Right.
Whereas somebody who needs to buy alcohol is probably planning ahead, I would assume.
What Jewel Osco was that? What town?
It was in Joliet. I'm not exactly sure which one, but
that is fascinating. I did not know that. And then the cashier said, sorry. Yeah, it's probably like
they
a
literally can't ring you up.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's and a lot of places have like you can't buy alcohol after from midnight to 4 a.m. or midnight to 6 a.m. You know, and that makes a little bit more sense, because usually as the night progresses, things don't get better.
Right.
You know, people, the later it gets, you know, decisions are not as, you know, well thought out.
Yeah. Have you ever had to kick someone out of your place?
I don't think so. That's one great thing. I mean, part of it's our customer base is awesome, and the craft beer customer base generally is amazing, and it's people are not coming there to drink quantity in general. They're coming there to taste the different beers, to enjoy time with their family or friends. There are certainly people who accidentally have a little more than they should, but compared to any other bar I've been to, craft breweries do this better than anywhere. And I think, you know, there's a lot of credit to the customers, because they're there to enjoy it, not to, you know, drink 10 beers.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever Have you ever thought about moving your location? I know it's impossible to move that barn. That barn's what makes it so beautiful and amazing. But people do, you know, they think twice about going out there because it's so far out there.
Yeah, you have to drive to get there. You can't. There's no public transportation.
Yeah, for people that don't know, I mean, look up Emancipation Brewing Company. It's out. It looks like it's out in the middle of nowhere. It's a few miles outside of Forest, Illinois.
Yeah.
And Fairbury, Illinois. So, but it is beautiful, and that's part of the draw.
Yeah.
But do you ever talk about it with your business partners?
We thought about other places originally, and then once we kind of got the idea of the barn, we decided that was our only way we were going to do it. And I don't think we have any regrets. It's I see it as a, and I think a lot of customers see it as a sort of like a haven away from. Sounds funny to say away from town when the towns are so small, but I do think it's sort of like it's just far enough that it's like that special place out of the way that, you know, it's like I said, it's serene. It's away from any urban area at all. And it's kind of an escape, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, whereas if you're driving 2 minutes to a place in town, you know, you may not get that special feeling of going somewhere, you know. But, you know, on the other hand, we also sell beer to our local establishments because we know that there are sometimes people don't want to drive out to our place, or they want to go frequent one of our other awesome businesses locally. And we want them to be able to have the option to drink a Huey or whatever it might be at those places and provide the benefit for those businesses of being able to sell Huey and other beers too. So it's
simple question. Is business going well for you?
Yeah, I mean, I can't complain. You know, we're sadly in 2022, no brewery owner is getting rich. It just, you know, costs have gotten too high. The days of being purchased by a, you know, multinational beverage company are long gone for the most part. And so, you know, it's got to be a passion to do it. You know, I respect anybody who's opening one now because, you know, they're in for a much different situation than there was even when we opened, you know, thanks to COVID and costs and things like that.
Right. But it's just a game of like margins, it seems like, because everyone knows you. Everyone knows you, Lincoln Slagle, and more people know Emancipation Brewing Company. I've talked to so many people here in Normal that when I say Fairbury, it used to be the racetrack. A lot of people think of Emancipation Brewing Company, though.
Well, that's cool. I mean, I hope that's the case. You know, I think I like to think of that area as a little – its own little escape from a lot of the urban areas in Illinois, because we have everything from the track to, you know, the Kilgus, Slagle Meats, all these attractions. And it's really a special area. Even things like, you know, some of the best plumbing people and electricians in all of Illinois are sort of in that little hub, you know. And so I think that is neat.
I think Fairbury has a lot of potential. I mean, they're not quite Lexington. Lexington's a Goldilocks area where they're right next to Bloomington Normal.
Yeah, that's a huge
exactly
benefit.
The right proximity to Bloomington Normal, and they can still provide that small town feel and vibe. Fairbury's a little further, but Fairbury's pretty special too. I think their city hall needs to get more on social media. I think they need to get more with it, and I'm gonna make a video for them pretty soon.
Oh, awesome!
But yeah, Fairbury's special. They do have a lot of the best plumbers, electricians, I mean, brewing companies. We have so much. We have so much. We just have to establish ourselves a little better, I think, in the public eye.
Yeah, I've thought that, and we've talked about in the area, me and a few other local kind of businesses that are, I guess, could be more tourist-oriented, about how to get more people here. And, we get people from Bloomington, Chicago, Champaign, Peoria every week at the brewery. And I know like the track draws people from all across the country for their few huge weekends of the year. And so the idea is, you know, how can we get more people to the area? You know, in general, it's sad to go, you know, I deliver to a lot of small towns. You know, we like to go to small places that offer craft beer. And I mean, there's a lot of small towns that just have that feeling, a little bit of feeling of dread where it's like, you know, it feels like people are, you know, nothing's happening. Nothing's on the up and up. Like everything's kind of just sliding backwards a little bit, and I just, you know, the last thing I would ever want to see is, you know, some of these neat little towns go away because they're not, you know, actively trying to get new people in.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot of work. It's an uphill battle, no doubt, for small towns like Fairbury to get more on the scene. It's because of the interstates. That's the truth. It's because the interstates just went all the way around those towns. You used to have to drive through those towns to get to the big cities like Bloomington, like Champaign, like Peoria. Now you just don't.
Yeah. I know, it's funny, that movie Cars, where Radiator Springs is sort of, you know, left off to the side. And, you know, that movie is extremely relatable, I'm sure, to towns like, you know, Shenandoah or Lexington or Pontiac, Odell, all those. You know, so that definitely doesn't help. But what we found is people will drive off the beaten path if what you're offering is compelling enough. I mean, Kilgus is, they're a dairy farm, which you would normally, especially growing up in a rural area, like, why would I ever want to go to a dairy farm? But they draw in a lot of people because they're offering really high quality products. They're marketing themselves. They are, they've just the ice cream machine. I mean, it's not even like they're doing so much stuff. It's just they're doing a good job of marketing themselves, and people go there.
People really underestimate, these small business owners in places like Fairbury, really underestimate the power of social media. If you have good pictures, good captions, people will come. They see your stuff on the Explorer page. You're like, what is that? Oh, that's cute. Like, you want to emphasize the cute aspect of what you do. People want to come to you and think it's, like, unlike anything they've ever been to. They want it to be authentic. They want to come to the real dairy place in a real rural farm town. This is how those people think in the big cities. Like, Champaign, even. Oh, really? You're from – that's, like, a real dairy family. They have their own farm. They milk their cows by hand sometimes. They think that's really cool in a lot of places. And luckily – you have a place in a, you have a business in a rural area, and you're young enough to know to utilize social media. Some of these other places, it's going to be their Achilles heel that they don't know how to use social media.
I know, and that's actually, you asked what the worst part of the business is, and I would say social media is maybe tied with fixing leaks.
Please tell me more about that. Why is that the case?
Well, you know, trying to keep up with what Facebook wants from a business, you know. The last thing I want to do after I've been brewing for 10 hours and, you know, squeegeeing off the floor and doing other not very romantic things, you know, is to make a Facebook post. And, you know, it's not enough just to make a Facebook post, but it's got to be well thought out. It's got to be written well. It's got to be have a nice picture. And then you've got to still meet the criteria that Facebook wants to be able to show it to the maximum amount of your followers. So there's, you know, the algorithm is always changing, as they say, and if you don't keep up with that stuff, it, you know, it has an immediate impact. And I mean, we even see it with posts, like we'll post about our new sour beer that we did. That post got a ton of likes and a ton of reach. And that weekend, we were extremely busy. People coming to try the beer, they had seen it on Facebook, they'd seen it on Instagram. And then what happens is, you know, if I am too busy and I forget to make a Facebook post or whatever, you can actually see the kind of the product of that,
yes,
you know,
the
in that exact weekend, you know, sometimes it's not always correlated, but it's, you can see it. And then how busy the tap room is based on that. So, I mean, there's so many places around Central Illinois, like I think of White Oak or Keg Grove or Little Beaver or Distill. They all have such good social media, you know, great pictures. They have interesting people on there. They're posting cool pictures. And they do it as good or better than, you know, most breweries I see. And Bloomington has become a hub for breweries, I think, a lot due to that. Obviously, their beer is great and all that stuff, too, but to get people there, you know.
Right. And Bloomington Normal's enjoying a lot of inflow of new people moving here for a number of reasons. We got Rivian, we got State Farm, we got a whole bunch of businesses, we got so many places to eat, although those businesses are all the restaurants are hurting for people to come work there, which is an interesting problem that I still don't quite understand, the employment problem.
Yeah, I have a couple of thoughts on that also.
If you could tell me those, please. I mean, you're a business, I don't have employees, you do. So please, what do you think about that?
I think, especially in the food service industry, when I think of it from my point of view, I drive down Veterans Parkway in Bloomington, for example, and you see, I don't know, on Veterans, there's got to be 150 restaurants.
Oh, yeah.
And let's say you're driving down there at 7:30 on a Friday. How many people are working in each restaurant, giving up their Friday night, but not just that Friday night? If that's their career, that's giving up pretty much every Friday night forever. If you think of it like that, it's like when the pandemic happened, once somebody gets that perspective, are they really going to want to go back and do it for potentially not enough money? I mean, I don't think that the whole problem is underpayment. I think that part of it is, would you want to give up every Friday and Saturday night, which are the nights restaurants are busiest and they need their best staff? Would you want to give those up every night forever?
No.
How about 50 weeks of the year if you have, let's say you have 2 weekends off, which from what I hear from a lot of people in the food industry, they're lucky if they're not the owner of a successful business, they're lucky if they can have 2 weekends off. You know, they have to go on vacation during the week or whatever it might be. But when I think of it like that, it's like, man, it's no wonder nobody wants to do that. That's tough. So like how we fight that with our food trailer is we have a few more employees and we send out a survey. They tell us what days they want to work each month. So if they have a family get together on a Friday night that they don't want to miss, they tell us that in a month or two in advance and we work around that and schedule around that. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot more work, but it does, I think, really help.
So you talked about the Facebook algorithm and what you can and cannot post. Let's say instead of what you just said, that era of time, let's say 2022. Mm-hmm. The reason I say that is because I've had a video taken down from YouTube because we said the C word and the P word, and let's say 2022.
Perfect.
But I've always wondered how these people that got laid off from their jobs or mm-hmm. fired from their jobs – and then they start to enjoy the home life. And then they got these, basically money from the government. I'm drawing blanks. What is that?
Well, the couple of the stimulus payouts.
Yes, exactly what I meant. How do they make money now? Do they need to make money? More kids are living with their parents now than any time in history in the United States except the Great Depression. That's not nothing. That's insane.
Yeah, it is wild to think about. And, you know, I think it's, again, I always go back to, you know, what's in the long-term interest of the business. And to me, one of the things in the long-term interest is getting good people and paying them a level that is fair to them and fair to the business. So I think that businesses might need to pay a little bit more, but also it's not just the pay. You know, I think there was a huge survey that went out and said that, you know, that it wasn't just the pay that is keeping people away from work. It was, you know, the work-life balance. It was the quality of management, that kind of thing. And I think that there's a lot of, whether it be lack of respect or empathy for people, lack of flexibility. I think that if you want to have good people, you know, you've got to pay for them, for one. And if that means you have to charge higher prices, everybody I talk to in the food and beverage industry says if your quality is good, people will come. Regardless of your prices. Now, you obviously can't charge obscene prices, but there's an argument to be made that, you know, maybe some places are nervous to charge enough, and so then there's this cycle of not charging enough, not, you know, having high enough revenue, then they can't afford the quality of people that they need or the longevity, you know, the lower turnover rate, let's say. So there, I think it's a multifaceted issue where there's people who maybe don't want to go back to work because they're thinking of what it used to be, and they just can't bear to go back to that. Mixed with the fact that, you know, it is compelling. I'd love to sit on the couch a little bit more too, and I don't think that's the main reason. You know, I think that's a part of it. So,
how have you had to raise prices a little bit, and how have people responded? How was that experience for you emotionally?
Yeah, it's not fun to raise prices. We have raised our prices a little bit, and we haven't seen, if anything, we've been busier. Now, part of that is being 2022, not, you know, any other year mm-hmm. as of late. But it's also, again, if you provide the quality experience, the quality product, you know, people are still going to come. You know, I think too many people worry about the price as opposed to worrying on about maximizing quality. So if you say, I'm going to make the best thing I can make and have the best experience we can have and offer the whole package as well as we can, instead of thinking of that, they think, you know, are people going to pay, you know, X amount more than they are now? And so I think looking at it the opposite way is better. And then part of that is just accepting, hey, maybe I'm going to have to pay a little bit more for these great workers and put a little bit more time into being a higher quality manager. You know, maybe I'm going to have to be a little bit more flexible. But again, it's all about, I think, the mutual respect of, you know, you're providing service for me as an employee. I'm providing service to you in terms of, you know, a fun work environment, not necessarily fun all the time, but, you know, a high quality work environment, a safe work environment. We care about you. You care about us, you know, that kind of thing.
We're getting towards the end of this conversation, or at least we better be for the sake of the viewers' attention span. I want to ask you a couple more questions, though. First, who do you look up to? That's a weird question, but I mean it. Who do you look up to? Who's been a big role model for you?
I think, you know, of all of them, the way that I've seen my dad and my uncle, who were in business together, run their business over the years. I worked there in high school as a stacker of steel parts, which I, you know, that was what made me realize I'd never
Where'd you work at? For people
Slagle Manufacturing.
Know. Okay.
I never wanted to stack steel parts again, so I decided whatever I can do to not do that anymore was what I was going to do. And then I tried welding. Not a good welder. Couldn't do it. I have so much respect for those people that can. You know, I tried all of that stuff, and, you know, I finally found kind of what I was good at, but, you know, they don't necessarily pay the best, you know, flat out. You can make more working at a Rivian or another company like Caterpillar, whatever it might be. But we've seen time and time again over the years is that employees will leave and then they'll come back because they missed the work environment. They missed a boss who cared about them. They missed all that, you know. Again, it wasn't about the pay per se. Now, there's
the
always
quality of life.
But exactly. But it wasn't just that. It was the fact that when they would lose an employee due to somebody else paying them more, their response was, "I'm really happy for you. I'm happy that you're able to better yourself. You always have a job here." If, you know, assuming they were a good employee, they always have a job there if they decide to come back. That kind of attitude where, you know, the kind of mutual respect like I was talking about before. How could you ever, as a boss, be sad that an employee is moving on if it's better for them? You know, that kind of thing. But I see so many business owners that hold a grudge, or they're unhappy that an employee is leaving to better themselves, that kind of thing. You know, so I would say as a role model in business especially, the way that they've done it for now 27 or 28 years is how I strive to be also, you know. So that's the main one. But
that's a great way to do business. Yep. We're glad for you that you're bettering yourself. You're making a better life for yourself. That'll make someone probably think twice, too. Maybe they're playing a little psychological game there. Probably not. I know your dad, and those guys they mean what they say, and they have great hearts. That's awesome. So it's your dad and your uncle?
Yeah, his brother, yeah. Okay. And also, you know, as far as role models go, you know, you think of family members in business together, they always say, you know, you shouldn't go into business with your family, your wife, or your best friend. But the way that they've worked together, you know, amicably coming to agreements when they don't agree on things, you know, it's sort of like everything. It's like usually people have more in common than they do different. And if you focus on the stuff you have in common first and then get to the stuff that's different, you come at a disagreement from a lot better perspective. So seeing them do that has helped a lot when maybe I see something going on with an employee that's I wouldn't do, or, you know, being empathetic enough to know, okay, we have the same goal. Maybe we just don't look at it the same way. Let's figure it out, kind of thing. You know, that I think is important also.
And you've been lucky to have some really great employees. You seem to employ a lot of teachers that weren't just teachers, but I mean, Mrs. Klein, Mr. Chaplin, these are people that everyone loves. So I would assume you don't have too many problems with bad work ethic maybe or something like that.
No. And again, it's, you know, we don't just hire anybody, but, you know, the pay, as far as a part-time job, the pay is probably higher than any part-time job in the area. So, it's, you know, from a pay perspective, it's not hard to find great people, but it's, you know, we hire not based on skill as a bartender. We hire based on personality and, you know, is this person going to treat our customers right? Is this person going to be trustworthy so that when I do go home and have some time, I don't have to sit at home worrying about, is the cash register going to be balanced when I get back? Is the, you know, is there still going to be the same amount of beer in the back room when I, you know, when I come in as when I left, you know, that kind of stuff is worth so much. Again, it's like, how much is it worth to pay somebody a little less and then have all those worries and spending time dealing with them extra, you know, all those costs add up too.
Right. I don't know. I've never heard anyone say they return to a restaurant for the skilled bartender, but rather the kind and friendly bartender, or like the skilled service. It's the friendly service. Mm-hmm. You forget who people are and how they were, but you never forget how they make you feel.
Yeah.
And when you go to Emancipation, they make you feel welcomed, like you were saying in the beginning of this conversation. Last question here. What's the plan for the future of Emancipation then?
Yeah, I guess more of the same as far as the taproom experience goes. You know, like I said, we want to continue to hone it and make it more of what our kind of ultimate vision of, you know, a nice evening out kind of is. But, you know, we want to continue to make better beer. You know, now that we have, you know, beer in cans and have a little bit more of a footprint, you know, our hope is to that I can spend more time making really unique and fun beers that, you know, get people to come out and try them and share them with friends and family, that kind of thing. But in general, it's just constantly improving, you know, whether that's the quality of the beer, whether it's the quality of experience, you know, how much our employees enjoy working there, how much, you know, even our existing customers enjoy coming, all that kind of stuff. You know, like I said, nobody is sadly is getting super rich brewing beer anymore. But that wasn't the point when we got into it. You know, it was something we really wanted to do. So I'm just excited to keep doing it.
Man, you got a good heart for business. You got a good mind for business. You get it genetically. You're a good man, Lincoln Slagle, and I really appreciate you coming on today.
Well, thank you so much. It was a great time talking.
Right on. Great time drinking fantastic beer, too. My goodness, that was delicious. I got to have beer on every episode because I think that gets the conversation going. But thank you, everyone, for watching and listening to The Paul Garcia Show. That was Lincoln Slagle of Emancipation Brewing Company in Fairbury, Illinois. Thank you to Marshalloni's Pizza, Pam Deaton with Health Markets, Fairbury Furniture, and Fairview Haven's In Motion Physical Therapy. Until next episode, God bless and have a great week.